Welcome, everybody, to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me as always...
Hey, everyone, it's Nick Morris.
Nick Morris, ladies, he loves America. If you love America, you know who to hit up. Now, Nick, how's your week been, buddy?
You know what? It's been pretty good. I can't lie. Nothing too fabulous. Just me living my life, slinging pasta. What about you, Grayson?
Slinging pasta. Well, you know, working, trying to get the show closed out. Working like crazy, trying to pay some vendors. There never seems to be an end to the paperwork in production county. But I tell you what, though, Nick, this morning, I dropped my phone down the elevator shaft, between the elevator itself and the wall, like the three or 4 inches of space.
Ooh.
Phone went right down through there, and boy, let me tell you, I just kind of sat there on my knees looking at it like, what just happened? Are you kidding me?
Let me ask you, Grayson, what floor did it end up on?
Ooh, good question. I was on the first floor when that happened, so it only fell... maybe 5 feet, but it was unfortunately not in the... I had just taken it out of my case because I was going to plug it into my car because I needed navigation. And, like, I had just taken it out, and, like, I was texting someone, and I tripped, and then it hit the ground and then, like, slid forward a few more inches and then just, like, thunk.
Like, oh, man.
Imagine you're watching a ball roll towards a hole in mini at putt-putt, and then and then the ball just goes in the hole. It's gone. That's what my phone looked like. Just gone. So that was a big ordeal, but I got my phone back, so I'm happy. I felt like you know, honest to God, and here's what I just realized at that moment is, I would have traded my wallet for my phone.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't know if you have the, you know, the credit card thing where you could use your phone as your credit card, but hey, people do that. Times are changing.
People do, and
don't
the guy that
wallet anymore.
The elevator tech that came, I have to pay the full service charge. I'm okay doing it, but the elevator tech that came was just kind of laughing at me. He said, "What'd you car key? What'd you lose? Something that you can't replace?" I go, "My phone," and he starts like he does this thing where he genuinely is laughing, and I said, "Sir, I'm aware. Why are you laughing?" He goes, "I've never heard of." How'd your phone end up down there? I'm like, man, I don't want to talk about it. Can you please get my phone out from the depth of hell underneath the elevator, please?
Oh, God.
So we use this little... Really, it's really easy to open elevator doors, by the way. You have to have a screwdriver, and this little hole should be on one of the elevator doors, and you stick it in there and just unhinge the... you unlock the elevator door, so then they slide freely if there's no car on that floor. So then you just open them up.
Huh.
So, yeah, that's... That was a lot of fun, let me tell you. I got my phone back. All is now good. We are heading into some movies, Nick. Boy, oh boy. We got some...
Ooh-wee.
And everywhere you look, Thor, 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 Thor. Everywhere is Thor.
Oh, yeah, dude. I walked into the theater this week. Three screens all had Thor on it. Pretty impressed.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... Thor is here to take over. That's going to be our topic for next week, but this week... We have a good episode for you. We have a lot of Star Wars news. We have a kind of a cool Wonder Woman story to talk about. And we have a continuation of a pretty huge franchise. So without any further ado, let's dive into the box office. This is the week after. This is when the box office really starts to like pick up for like you know the holidays, for Thanksgiving. So This is a big time for movies. Number one this week, and is absolutely no surprise, Thor Ragnarok. That's a pretty big movie there, Nick.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, like you said, no surprise there. I think we are all, I mean, me and you, certainly, we were waiting for Thor to come out in how many months? Finally here.
Oh, no, I definitely, it was hard for me to keep my mouth shut. I really love this movie, but I will say this. $180 million budget, $427 million.
Whoa.
That's what it brought in. The first week, that's impressive.
That is crazy.
I'm sorry, the first weekend, it just came out. So, yeah, that's pretty huge. So, with that, I wanted to sing the mountaintop, but growing up, when I was 16, I started working in movie theater, and when I started working, we were still using the, you know how the actual film prints came of the movies? So, like, there was actual, print going through a projector. It wasn't all digital on a hard drive. So they used to send the big movies like 3 weeks before just to make sure there's no problems. You know, 2 weeks before, 1 week before, just to make sure there's no problems. So because I've been such good friends with these guys at the theater, I saw Thor like weeks ago. Because the October had the 30th and 31st was on a Monday and Tuesday, and then we went to November. It was the week, so it was last week, the beginning of last week, I was able to see Thor. So I was like, I want to talk about it so bad, but I can't.
That's awesome.
So we will see. We will talk about Thor next week. But boys and girls, it is a fun movie. I'll tell you what. And Chris Hemsworth, he is a pretty man. To quote the lady sitting in front of me, he is a delicious man.
He is a delicious man. That is great.
He's as she kept saying, yummy. He's yummy. Number two, Bad Moms Christmas. I'm glad this movie's making tons of money. It cost $28 million to make, and it has brought in just over $28 million. So I feel like that's gonna shoot up now as we go into the holidays and people have more free time.
Oh yeah, definitely. This is just one of those things, you know. Halloween's over, man. Halloween's over. We're gonna skip straight to Thanksgiving. Bad Moms Christmas. That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. The Bad Moms. They're doing Christmas. They're drinking stuff and they're eating stuff and they're dancing and stuff and all the stuffs. They're doing it all.
Mila Kunis. Mila Kunis.
She still got it. I'm sure she still got it.
So her last movie was Bad Moms, correct?
Oh, that I don't know.
I believe it was.
I'm sure there's something in between. It's strange for someone as big as her not to have two movies at once. So with Bad Moms, there would have been something. She would have had something else.
I actually had no idea that was a. I just thought Bad Moms Christmas was its own.
No.
I mean, it kind of is its own thing, but I had no idea. I guess I kind of forgot about Bad Moms.
No worries. I mean, this one I'm not going to forget about. This one's hilarious. We'll talk about it next week. And I will say this. I'm disappointed. Jigsaw number 3. I expected a lot more out of this movie. We'll get into that later, but I expected a ton more out of this movie than what we got.
Mm-hmm.
$10 million worldwide brought in just a hair under 60. It's not doing terrible as far as financially, but I think it's reception, they wanted it to do much better. So, Jigsaw, you let me down. Sorry, buddy. Tyler Perry's Boo 2 is in number 4. Nick, how does it make you feel?
Hey, Tyler Perry, that's what up. What up, man?
what up, T-Perry?
He's out there being Madea, making movies. I gotta say, I'm jealous. I don't like the movies. I'm jealous, though.
What up, T-Pair? All right. $25 million to make. $43 million were brought in worldwide. $43 million. So it's making money. Good for you, Tyler Perry. Congratulations. Geostorm, number 5 this week. $120 million budget. So far, $182 million. So whatever they were banking on as far as people liking, it sure did. And I tell you what, it was. I have a friend over in Italy that I talked to. The Geostorm came out recently over there as well. And this, I talked to him on I messaged him on Kick because that's how we can talk for free without like. Anyway, he said he really enjoyed it. And it was just a lot of fun. It was mindless, but it was a lot of fun. So I'm glad that.
Yeah.
Other people had the same vibe I got. Mindless, but a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Gerard Butler. We are Geostar. All right. Happy Death Day, number 6. $4.8 million. Nick, take a guess.
Oh, man.
It's well under 100. I'll give you that.
Let's go with, I think last week I said like somewhere between 60 or 70. I'm going to go with like, you know, with, $55
million. 78 million. You're off. That's okay.
Okay, I'll do whatever.
I'm very surprised that movie's still doing as well as it's doing, but I'm happy for it. I mean, people seem to like it. Good for that movie. Thank You for Your Service, one of the focuses of today's episode. $20 million budget has brought in domestically less than 8 million. And I'll tell you what, $30 of that is Grayson's money, so I saw it twice. Unfortunately, the night I tried to see it, I was super tired and I fell asleep. I know. When you're running ragged all day and you have like 4 days back to back that are super long and tried to sit, it was really warm in there. I was out like a light.
Oof. Blade. Hey, shout out to Miles Teller. Two movies in top 10 right now.
Oh, geez. That guy's on fire. He is on fire. Blade Runner 2049. $150 million budget worldwide, $240. That is pretty respectable. I hope we have not seen the end of the Blade Runner franchise. If there is story to tell, I hope we have not seen the end of the franchise. Had a really heated debate about the canonical ending with someone over breakfast. I was the payroll guy on my show was leaving, and a couple of us went out to eat to have breakfast before his flight. And we got into a pretty heated debate over what the preferred ending was with Blade Runner. I gotta be, I'm surprised that a lot of people didn't take my canonical ending, at least my side of Decker being a human and Joey K dying at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm surprised that people are still debating that one. Maybe it's less obvious than I thought, but number 9, Only the Brave. Those brave firemen, they're still in the top 10. $38 million budgets, just under $17 million. Not great. It's a pretty emotional movie, as we covered, but it's not doing well.
Did you expect it to do better? I guess I kind of did, but after watching the movie, I enjoyed it. You can hear us on last week's episode talking about it, but, I mean, it's not a story for all, you know?
Well, it's very emotional.
But it is an enjoyable story. Yeah, exactly what you said. It's different.
It's incredibly emotional, and you know what you're getting into, especially when, like I always say, it's the same shot of the movie. Do you remember Remember Me with
Robert
Pattinson about how it was revealed in the end, like the camera sweeping by the chalkboard and had the date written on it?
Mind blown.
Just crazy. After he said he was going to go wait up in his father's office in New York, like, and then it's revealed what day it is. For those of you who weren't able to figure it out, like, holy crap. Like, that's one of those, I love those moments of, especially in this one when he's standing up front on, there's a picnic in Only the Brave, and he's, or no, it's not a picnic, it's, oh, it's when he's revealing the name to everyone, the Granite Mountain Hotshots, and like, that's like, holy crap, it's those guys, I know what happened to all of them. Well, our thoughts and prayers go out to those families affected. Only the Brave. Not doing well financially, but it's a pretty good movie. And number 10, Let There Be Light. This must be an extremely limited release so far. No budget given, only brought in just over a hair over $4 million. So, not doing great. Some other ones to round out the top 20. The Foreigner, Jackie Chan still kicking. Suburbicon's up there. LBJ, It is still in the top. Number 15. It, and Nick, I know how good you are at this, so just because we did this for a while, off of a $35 million budget, Nick going, probably going to go 1 for 8.
Okay, so it's definitely up there. I mean,
I'll give you hints. It's above 650, below 700 million.
Oh, wow.
$679. $677, pretty good guess.
Oh, man, okay, all right.
But they're definitely happy with those numbers, that I know.
Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, man. Great movie.
Oh, terrifying movie.
They're
putting
up the numbers, man.
American Made, Kingsman, Lego Ninjago, The Florida Project, and My Little Pony, rounding out 16 through 20. So there you have it. There are those.
And just a quick second, Grayson. I got to say, shout out to all the people that dressed as Pennywise this Halloween. I saw a lot of crazy, cool people on Twitter that dressed up as Pennywise, and they nailed it. They nailed it.
I did. There was a lot of Pennywises in the neighborhood I was in, in the neighborhood I just moved to for the duration of the show. There was a lot of people walking around as kids walking around in Pennywise makeup. I kind of find that disturbing a little bit, but I mean, if they like it, they like it. It's, I guess these days, as a, I can't imagine raising kids as a parent these days. It's hard enough to get your kids into anything these days. So if something that excites them, I guess let them be, you know, let them be it or Pennywise.
Yeah, maybe this will make kids less scared of clowns.
I mean, kids don't need to be less scared of things. They're already not scared of drugs and guns and whatever else the hell not. But
hey, you're right.
They, they need to be scared of some things. All right. What came out this past week, if you were living under a rock of some sort, Thor Ragnarok made an appearance, along with The Killing of a Sacred Deer. This coming week, Daddy's Home 2, go Mel Gibson, and Murder on the Orient Express. November 17th is Justice League, Wonder, the star, Roman J. Israel, Esquire. And the 24th, the weekend of Thanksgiving, is going to be somewhere in that week, the 22nd to the 24th, depending on where you are and what theaters you have near you, Coco, The Darkest Hour, Man Who Invented Christmas, The Current War, and Polaroid, the horror movie that got pushed back, is Polaroid. December 1st, He's Out There, Wonder Wheel, The Shape of Water, Very Limited, and Disaster Artist Limited. I'm sure they're coming out limited so they can be considered for Oscars if they get that far.
Very true. And I just saw a second trailer for The Disaster Artist over the week.
What do you think?
Ooh, can't wait for it. Can't
wait for it. December 8th, The Shape of Water, Wider, All the Money in the World. Now, just a little discussion on this first. Just Getting Started, and I, Tonya. This, All the Money in the World, with all the recent news surrounding Kevin Spacey, what do you think they're going to, because they straight up canceled House of Cards.
Like, yeah, that's, and, well, they just renewed it for their last season, and then they canceled it. Oh, man.
That surprises me, given how, that's not the most popular of shows anymore. I think it's kind of run its course almost, but people do love that, like, diehard love that show.
I saw a couple people, they were talking about it, and they're like, I was on season 6 or something, like halfway through it, or sorry about it. But yeah, go on about All the Money in the World. What?
I don't know if that one may not come out as scheduled. At this point, I think it's too late to pull it, but I wouldn't be surprised, I'll just say, if that movie is pushed back quite a while. It wouldn't surprise me, given the recent, news.
I agree with you. I mean, it's obviously unsettling news, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. They could just roll with it, or they could push it back.
Oh, I mean, let's hope that doesn't get pushed back. I mean, there's a lot of other good talent on that show besides Kevin Spacey on that movie. So, I mean, it's a shame that controversy surrounding him is really a thing. And I really love Kevin Spacey. I mean, I don't look at him any differently. I was arguing with myself the past week about should I look at him differently. I mean, I don't. I just look at him as Kevin Spacey, that guy who's in a lot of movies I like. He's actually a very good actor, so.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I agree with you.
So we have countdowns. We have 1 week until Daddy's Home. Justice League, we are just 2 weeks away. Coco, Darkest Hour, and Man Who Invented Christmas, 3 weeks away. Shape of Water and Disaster Artist, if you happen to be living where that's going to be released, you're just a month away. And All the Money in the World, Ridley Scott, 5 weeks away. Unless it gets pushed, no one knows. And here's some fun stuff. Kathleen Kennedy is talking the next 10 years on Star Wars. Now, before I get into that, I do want to point out that we all know that Disney has acquired, Disney now owns Star Wars. And it makes you wonder how, now that Disney acquired it, a lot more Star Wars movies are being made than in the past, how many years? 40 years? 30 years?
Yeah. That's Disney, man. Disney's gonna bleed something that if it's got the power to make money, Disney's got a hold of it.
Yeah, but Disney doesn't. I don't think Disney kills things. I mean.
Oh no, they don't kill it. You know. but they're gonna take it for what it's worth.
I think you're probably right about that. So that's interesting to know that when Disney got a hold of it, that's when it started making all these. That's when you started announcing all these kind of movies, and I know that there was a standstill for a while before the deal was actually complete. But I thought that was interesting to take a look at. Now, go back to Kathleen Kennedy on the next decade of the franchise. She was talking about where the story will go, where it could go naturally, as opposed to where the story could be artificially taken, and which got me thinking because of the where her article goes. It got me thinking a little bit about the stories beyond Episode 9, she goes on to say, with characters like Finn, BB-8, Rey, and Poe. So now we know they all survive the next two movies. All those she mentioned, we know, do not die. And that's kind of, she specifically said stories, used the word beyond Episode 9, meaning the events have taken place, we're moving past the events of 9, so we know who won't die, so have no fear that Finn, BB-8, Rey, and Poe will die, because they will not. She also goes on to talk about the endless possibilities, which I think is kind of cool because it's in a galaxy far, far away of endless possibilities. And we may be getting soon, there is, in the very early process, an untitled Obi-Wan Kenobi film. No mention on where in his life that would take place. I'm guessing early Obi-Wan, very early. Or maybe even in between 3 and 4.
I would like to see that. I think we all would. To be honest.
Yeah, but after he was Ewan McGregor and before he was Alec Guinness, like, what happened to him?
Who are you? Oh, man.
Or it could be, you know, the love story of when he fell in love with one of those Jawas on Tatooine. I'm kidding, I don't know. That's
Grayson, you're giving Disney ideas right now, all right?
I'm giving They're plot away. Down. I need to stop giving plot away. We also went on to talk about a possible Jabba the Hutt movie, Boba Fett, Gul Greedo. What? Why? I am a little floored as to why any of them... I can see the Boba Fett movie. I can't really understand why you'd want to make a Jabba the Hutt movie.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely be interesting, I guess. Because of all the different characters that he'd probably interact with. Or, you know, maybe, you know what they could do, or probably how they should do it, maybe how, because Boba Fett pretty much worked for, well, Boba Fett was his own person, but he worked with Jabba the Hutt a lot. Maybe they make not a Jabba the Hutt standalone movie, throw them two together, maybe it could work.
I'm guessing it would cover Han Solo's early dealings with Jabba the Hutt. But I'm sure that the movie Solo will cover that, unless it goes far enough back that we're not there in the timeline yet. So, I mean, all that is a possibility. As long as people understand, Han shot first, damn it. Han shot first. That is imperative that people understand. Well, I mean, whenever I see that shirt, Han shot first, I'm like, yes, that guy gets it, or that girl gets it, whoever's wearing the shirt. I've heard people try to make the argument that, no, he shot in self-defense. I'm like, that undoes the entire character. That makes him not a fun, interesting, scruffy nerf herder, you know, anti-hero. It makes him not fun anymore. But and then, as we go into more Star Wars stuff, John Boyega, he was talking to a magazine and made the comments about he wishes there was more than just one Jedi right now in the story, and he wishes he was one. Well, don't we all? Don't we all want to be Jedi? Let's be serious. Now,
true.
I ask people to, as you're driving or however you listen to this podcast, just take a few minutes to consider, should there be a lot of Jedi, or should we only stay with Rey and Luke as far as the last Jedi? And, of course, yeah, the evil Sith that are still considered Jedi, but I would say no. I would say I don't want him to be a Jedi only because I want there to be as few Jedi as possible to bring the struggle back to, you know, dismal and dark.
Yeah, I agree with you. For right now, I think it's just perfect where it is, you know? Because, obviously, when the Jedi were thriving, you know, when it was a big thing, you know. Actually, I lost my train of thought. But what I'm trying to say is I like where it is. I like where Rey is. I like how she's trying to where this next movie's going, it's Rey trying to harness her powers. And I think I don't think they need more Jedi. I think they continue with this. See where we land after the ninth movie, you know?
I would agree. I don't think we need any more than the Jedi we have, or at least Rey training to be a Jedi. I mean, this is a crucial decision. This is a big deal because Star Wars is an enormous franchise. Maybe the biggest franchise ever, but I mean it's a big deal to just throw more Jedi, just randomly make Finn a Jedi. I don't think that works in his character. I don't know.
It would be sloppy if they did it.
I hope that Rey and Ren work out their differences, and Rey is able to win Ren over to the good side, and because he killed his father, he killed Han Solo. He's the man who killed Han Solo. So the less Jedi, I think, is the better. Jedi are iconic, important. Everything that's good about Jedi, I go back to Alec Guinness explaining in the beginning of Episode 4. In my theory, the only reason that movie got made is Alec Guinness said, "Yeah, whatever. I'll do this piece of crap for you, George. I'll be this character for you." They were, you know, defenders in a time of great reason, and then eventually faded out, hunted down, and killed by Vader.
Okay.
So then the article goes on to talk about Rey being the one awakened and not Finn, but that makes total sense if there is an awakening that it was Rey. Now the last thing I want to talk about is he does make a valid point of there needs to be more characters in the movie that are able to stand up to what will inevitably be Snoke and Kylo Ren and all the other the Sith. There need to be people more than just Rey that are able to stand up to them as far as fighting them, you know, one-on-one.
Yeah, that's very true.
Which does make sense. Even from a story point of view, it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nick, how badly do you want to be a Jedi?
You know what? I've always wanted to be a Jedi. I used to have the plastic lightsabers for a theater class in college. I wrote a small Jedi piece where I was a bartender, and I hope I'm not being sued because I used a cantina song in the background. But I love the Jedi ways, man.
Who doesn't, you know?
I still don't know. I don't know if I'm on the dark side or the light side. You know, I'm right there in the middle.
And I've always wanted to be a Jedi. I mean, who has one Jedi? But I tell you what, Nick. Let me ask you: what do you get when you combine, or when you take a Jedi apart? What does a Jedi consist of?
Well,
there's two sides to it. He's an excellent swordsman. Yes. And he also uses the Force, kind of a magic user. Now, I always harp back to this. What two characters in Lord of the Rings, when you combine, do you get a Jedi? Let me ask you that.
Ooh, you know what? That's tough. I'm going to guess Aragorn and Frodo. Or no, Aragorn and Gandalf.
Yeah, Aragorn and Gandalf. That's exactly where I thought that. And R2-D2 being the very small hobbit-like thing carrying the Death Star plans or the ring to the right people to make sure it gets destroyed and make sure they put it to good use. You know, so many different similarities, but
Grayson, you just blew my mind, bro.
To me, all Star Wars ever was Lord of the Rings in space. But then again, that's just to me. I mean, that's I might be, because I want to see it, that might be why I'm seeing it, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's The parallels are certainly there. Tatooine and the Shire both have hut, you know, small things on the planet, you know, whatever. But okay, before people start shouting at their car,
I gotta ask you, man. Did you see the cast for The Lion King?
I have, yes. We actually, it's one of the episodes a while ago we did. I've looked at it recently, but yeah, what's up?
They, I saw, like, most of the cast, you know, it, fantastic cast. I want to just put a spotlight on Timon and Pumbaa.
Who are Timon and Pumbaa?
Seth Rogen is Pumbaa, and Billy Eichner is Timon.
Oh my god, I just got more excited.
Yeah, dude, it's so perfect. The voices, man, they hit spot on.
I'm so excited for that movie now, you have no idea. Not that I wasn't before, but now I'm even more excited, but... All right, transitioning into Steve Trevor, more Wonder Woman news. I love Wonder Woman. I should take that back. I should rephrase. I love the Steve Trevor movie where Wonder Woman was a character in it. So, Jenkins goes on to reveal the origins of the Steve Trevor character, at least for her. But Steve Trevor was modeled after her father, and the reason she didn't come out with this earlier because she didn't want people approaching her about it. But it's her father was an American pilot who flew in Europe, and that's why that might be the reasons why it's such a big role is she was using her father as inspiration for the character, which I think is really cool, by the way. Many are hoping.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was just gonna agree because that is pretty cool. That's putting yourself. That's giving yourself a little bit of incentive to kind of write into a character.
Well, right.
Everyone's individual script is, they put a little piece of themselves in there.
Right. I mean, in every screenwriting class I ever took, the first thing that the professor said before he even takes roll call for the first time is, write what you know. So, you put a little bit of yourself in it, be it a director or your writer or whatever you're doing, you're putting a little bit of yourself into the project, which I think is really cool that she was able to, bring her father and use the inspiration of her father for that character.
Mm-hmm.
Many are hoping that he will return the sequel. I hope that the next Wonder Woman movie, Steve Trevor is again the biggest character in the movie.
Oh, man.
I personally loved his character, but I don't know. I thought that was really cool. I thought that would bring it up. Now.
Have you heard about Tarantino's new movie?
I have not. Nick, why don't you tell us about it?
It's, they're referring to it as number 9. Obviously, it's a, he's doing it on the Manson family murders. I guess he finished his screenplay, and so now he's shopping it around. He dropped his whole thing with Weinstein. He's done with Miramax, I believe. But he's expected to lock it in with a studio to finance, market, and distribute within the next 2 weeks.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I wasn't the biggest fan of Hateful Eight, but it was still a pretty good movie.
Oh yeah,
and I loved watching it. I think it was 70D or 70 millimeter. 70D is a camera. 70 millimeter. The how he wanted you to watch. I thought that was really cool.
I watched it on the Roadshow, man. Blew my mind.
I've never really been the hugest Tarantino fan, but I've always liked what he's done. I've never, he's just not my cup of tea. I like to add sugar and cream, making it kind of not that cup of tea anymore. But, I still do enjoy Tarantino movie now. Oh, I love Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, though. I love those two.
Two of my favorite movies.
I haven't really loved anything since. I love Django. I love Django up until Christoph Waltz dies. I'm like, why is there another hour of this movie? Why?
Speaking of Django, actually, It's predicted that it's going to cost about the same, $100 million, something like that.
Of course it will.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
But, I mean, you got stars like, rumored stars, Margot Robbie, Brad Pitt, and Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, Margot Robbie. Nice, okay.
Yeah. She's, which I actually had a guess when I first heard about her. Thought she was going to be playing Sharon Tate. If they get her, that's most likely what she'll play. But, yeah, man, that's going to be an interesting film, I'll say that.
Speaking of Margot Robbie, we have a trailer that we were talking about. Might as well just talk about that one first. I, Tonya trailer. Director Craig Gillespie, Margot Robbie, Bobby Cannavale, Sebastian Stan, Allison Janney. Nick, what'd you think?
It looks good. I see a lot of people on Twitter saying that this this might be like a really big movie for Margot Robbie, which, I mean, any movie is a big movie, but this could be her, maybe her shout out to stardom. You know, it to me it looks like a kind of an American Made. You know, they're telling the story of a of Margot Robbie who plays this figure skater, and I guess she was a badass. You know, tough childhood. She had a mother that was always pushing her and really didn't give an F. She only wanted results. But other than that, this figure skater has this crazy life where apparently, you know, the FBI gets involved. It's some pretty cool stuff. The trailer looks good. You know, Margot Robbie looks good. She still got it. She ain't lost it, and she won't for some time.
She ain't lost it in the 2 years she's been big. She hasn't lost it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you remember, she was also in Academy Award-winning Suicide Squad.
Oh, so. Yes.
I was going to throw in the Academy Award-winning part. And Murder on the Orient Express, not a new trailer, but it is coming out very soon. This is a big movie, folks. Directed by Kenneth Branagh. Excuse me. He's in it. Kenneth Branagh, Daisy Ridley, who is Rey, Star Wars, Leslie Odom Jr., Penelope Cruz, Josh Gad, Johnny Depp, Derek Jacobi, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Judi Dench, and Willem Dafoe.
I know Willem Dafoe.
What?
Actually, I don't. I know his nephew, though.
How do you know his nephew?
Went to college together, actually. Which I had no idea he was, they were related, obviously, but, he was roommates with one of my best friends from high school, so.
Do you feel comfortable saying what college that was?
Huh? What was that, Grayson?
Do you feel comfortable saying what college that was?
Oh, yeah, West Liberty University.
There you go.
It's okay, but, yeah. He was really, really cool kid. Yeah, we're pretty good friends. But he was like, yeah, Willem Dafoe's my uncle. And I'm like,
that's not something you just casually drop into a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. How do you just do that, man?
What? Do you say Willem Dafoe's your uncle?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But yeah, he would tell me stories and all that. But anyways, on the Murder on the Orient Express, I actually, when I first saw this trailer months ago, I had no idea it was a remake.
Yeah, it's been
reinstallment, I guess. Yeah.
This is it's a reimagining. It sure is. It's a murder mystery, and it's I think going to be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, it looks like a lot of fun.
You have a lot of big people in it. A huge list of casts I just read, none of which are small names. So, and Josh Gad, of course, coming off the recent success, Beauty and the Beast. It looks to be a pretty good one. I'm very excited for this one. Hold my breath a little bit though, because I've been let down by big movies before.
And then, haven't we all, man?
The New Mutants director, yeah, you're damn right. We have director Josh Boone. I'm talking to you, Troy. I'm talking to you, King Arthur. You really disappointing pieces of crap. Maisie Williams, Charlie Heaton, Anya Taylor-Joy. Looks to be, we did a news story on this actually a couple episodes back about this is a kind of like a spin-off of the X-Men universe. And this is the first of three. So that's exciting that we're going to get to follow these. I hope we get to follow these specific mutants through a couple more movies. And Maisie Williams is always a pleasure as she is on Game of Thrones. She's wonderful. So we'll see how she does in something that's not Game of Thrones.
I gotta say, man, the trailer still looks creepy.
It looks creepy.
It's not getting less any less creepier.
No. And if you remember, I think it was last week we talked about that it's definitely gonna follow a certain tone and not like mainstream X-Men movies, but a little darker, a little creepier. So that seems to be the name of the game these days, is dark and creepy. So that's exciting.
I mean, it seems to work, though. It looks very interesting.
Oh, I have no doubt it's gonna make it'll do gangbusters in the box office. I have no doubt it'll make tons of money. Now, because Jigsaw is such a big, you can't talk about Jigsaw without talking about Saw. So, Before that, we're going to talk about thank you for your service.
Yes, yes, yes.
This is another pretty emotional ride. I will admit, this is another, because it's, thank you for your service is, by director Jason Hall, who also American Sniper as well, is a story of Adam Schumann, who comes home. He's not the only one we're following, but he is the lead we're following. Miles Teller plays Adam Schumann, who comes home. He's done with his tours in Iraq, and he's trying to reintegrate into normal society with his family, with his wife. He's having some immense difficulty, as some people in his situation may have. I've never been in a combat situation, but I've known friends who have come back just not right. So I can understand what I kind of get it. I had a very good friend come back from overseas, and it took him a long time to get right again, to be able to go out and drink with us and not, you know, when someone slammed a beer glass on the table, not jerk his head around, you know, with reflex. So I get that. I really get that. So I don't know, Nick, what did you think?
Well, I actually had a pretty interesting, I fifth wheeled seeing this movie, and I'm not afraid or ashamed to say it.
Okay.
I came out of the bathroom, and one of my really good friends from high school, who was actually in the Army, he took his girlfriend out, and his buddy, who was in the Army too, got his girlfriend. They're like, "Hey, do you want to sit with us?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So it was interesting to see what they thought of the movie also, because they were overseas. You know, they also had the same, a little bit of the same experience, but nevertheless, it's war. But yeah, I thought the movie was pretty good. It wasn't too emotional, which I'm glad, because I probably would have cried in front of everyone.
Fair.
It relied heavily on, you know, the struggles of coming home from war, which, you know, that's what this movie's about. That's what it's pushing. It's trying to get, you know, PTSD out there. Miles Teller, phenomenal again. You know, it's weird because you see him transitioning throughout the whole movie as he's opening up to his wife and these military people, and there's a lot of interactions that he has in the movie that, you know, you're just like, wow, you know, he could have done it a different way, or, you know, he could have anticipated something else.
Here's what I think is a brilliant part, as we're talking about Miles Teller here for a second, who he's, of the ones that come back, he's the normal one.
Yeah.
He's the one that all his friends look to as, why aren't you having more problems? But then when we get into, when we follow him into his house and we have little intimate moments with his wife and conversations with his wife, he is anything but normal and fine. He is just as messed up as they are, but he's keeping it together for them. I thought that was one of the triumphs of the movie, is it shows the strength of the sergeant both on and off the battlefield. He's holding it together. He's leading his men on the battlefield, and he's also leading his men back home off the field. And I thought that was kind of a triumph as far as what this movie was able to achieve.
So yeah, exactly. And that's actually, I have a note here, yeah, where he's, you know, he's the leader. He's the leader who tried to look after his brothers, but, you know, ultimately their decisions are out of his hands. You know, he can't control them because they all have their different lives. You know, they're home now. They got all these different things going on. And it does suck because in the movie it gives you a glimpse of veterans and, you know, what they're doing, as in trying to get help for the PTSD, and it seems like a very long and outdated process, to be honest. I mean, I don't deal with it, but
no, you're not wrong. You put it very well. Outdated is, I mean, as there's a scene we witnessed early in the movie. They're back. They've come back, and they're sitting in a VA hospital, and it's just hours of red tape they have to sit through, and They got no. You're at the wrong window. No, you got to be on the second floor. No, you got to go get this card. No, you got to go. Got to go fill out that form. It's just, you're right. I think you might hit the nail right on the head. And I'm no expert on, you know, military history or anything, but outdated to the point where the government, it's put that way for a reason. So people
either
give up or they, you know, it's just, I can't imagine why they hadn't made it simpler. But once one answers that question, why isn't it simpler, is because they just don't want it to be simpler, the government.
Yeah, exactly. And that would, if I was standing in line, And I got out to the window, and the lady says to me, "Oh, you need your VA card." Okay, well, where do I go up? Go get one of those to the second floor. After I've been sitting in this damn room for like 3 hours,
for like 5 hours, they were sitting.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
And as we look around the room, we see people without arms. There's a guy with a mechanical leg. The guy with like half of his face has been blown off, and he's obviously still in recovery from that. It's like, oh my goodness. These people go over and give everything, and they come back and they sit in a room.
Jeez. Talk about a military takeover, Grayson. Me and these veterans, we're going to take over this building. Make sure we get our help.
Because you need it, man. You got the veterans. You got Nick who's slinging some pasta. You got, you know, injustices are being done everywhere.
I have one thing that isn't detrimental to the movie's plot, but it's the I don't remember his name, but Miles Schulman is right hand man.
Solo.
Yeah.
Tau Solo. It's a Tau Solo, but Beulah Cole is his name.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a part in this movie where, you know, obviously Miles tells him to stay off the streets. And you sort of know what it means, but he finds himself on the streets, and there's this moment where this, you know, he does get mixed into the wrong crowd, and this drug dealer, maybe gangbanger, asks him to do a job, and he promises him ecstasy to do it, but the guy gave him the ecstasy before he did the job.
Weird.
And the guy's on ecstasy. I mean, come on now. If I'm supplying and demanding, you know, you're gonna do the job first.
Well, I mean, you get him hooked, also. I mean, he knows, but
I didn't think about that.
There, Miles Teller's excellent. The guy just said, I don't know. I mean, he came out of Beulah Cole, phenomenal. Oh my good. I don't know who's better, him or Miles Teller in this movie. It's tough. It's a tough call.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic. And the Haley Bennett, who plays Adam's wife, Saskia Schumann, she's also pretty good.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer is in it as a widower of the actual... her husband is the wheel, or the story around which everyone else's story revolves around. Is,
yeah.
What I love about this movie is it opens and you see a glimpse of a reconnaissance mission gone terribly wrong, and they're in a firefight, and that's all you see is a quick glimpse. What you know is, and what I love is, did you go see him yet? Did you go see her yet? Did you tell her that yet? And the Miles is kind of avoiding it. So you know, by the end of the movie, you know we're going to see this mission unfold, and the events we've been learning about. That's the reward for sitting there is almost seeing everything play out. And like, oh my goodness. Like it's one of those, that's the strength of that kind of storytelling. You start, you give someone a little snippet, and then you go back and then you work up to the emotional ending, which is what I love.
I yeah, exactly. And it was an emotional ending. I couldn't get over Amy Schumer though. I don't know. She didn't have a huge part. Well, you know, obviously with lines and all that, she didn't have a huge part, but...
It was very, very important.
Yeah, exactly. She did have an important role, but I don't know. I couldn't get into believing her as a widower, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not a huge fan of Amy Schumer, I guess.
Well, Amy, please check the show at Love Cinema Pod, and you and Nick can duke it out, please. I mean, it's... She, It's kind of an odd casting choice.
Yeah, exactly.
She's done a lot of comedies lately, and not really. Not that she couldn't do it or she didn't do it, but it's just an odd choice, I guess.
I guess it makes it better that they colored her hair.
I mean, if that helped you accept her as that character.
It did a little bit.
Yeah, I really. This one is. This isn't one that you take a date to see, I don't think. Unless for some reason you and your date are both ex-military, then by all means. But I can understand why this movie's not making any money. The appeal of this. And as remember, we've also had, not in the near past or the most recent past, but we've also had American Sniper. We've had Stop Loss. We've had a long halftime march for Billy Lynn's long halftime march, all kind of on the, well, this one, Billy Lynn and Stop Loss are all about people coming back, reintegrating, and telling that story of what happened over there that either saved their life or brought them back. And that's, I mean, that's a certain kind of storytelling set up a certain way to elicit a very emotional response. So when people, when you're like, hey, did you see Thank You For Your Service? Like, oh, yeah, I did, actually. It was pretty sad. Like, it's set up in a certain way to make you walk away with the emotional pack, the emotional punch of the ending when Adam is telling, when Adam is telling Amanda Doster what happened to her husband when no one has told her yet. No one has told her the truth. And he finally tells her the truth. And you can, I mean, it's a very, very emotional time because you're seeing it all play out too. So it's actually the first time that he's been truthful with himself, and that he's been truthful indirectly with us as well, as telling us a story. So that's what I love the most about that.
I will say something this movie does get off does get right is I think the visualization of, you know, PTSD or them living with those struggles. And I think Billy Lynn's long halftime walk did that pretty well too. But I gotta tip my hat to Thank You For Your Service for doing that. That was very good.
I actually thoroughly enjoyed this one. I'm glad I was able to fit it into my schedule. One last thing I will say about it, I can see why it's not making money. I don't really agree with why it's not making money, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It does make sense. In a way where you understand something, but you wish it was making money, yes.
Well,
not everyone's.
It's a better movie than most of the things out there. I mean, it's certainly better than Jigsaw. I mean, it's not better than Thor. Not much is better than Thor, but it's better than most movies that are in the theater right now, I would say.
Yeah.
Or so we move on to what I think. It's funny, Jigsaw is the big movie of the week only because of the legacy that's behind it. Yet I think of the two movies, Thank You For Your Service is definitely the better one.
Mm-hmm.
But we are moving on to Jigsaw. Excuse me. Yes, 100%. If you are on the fence about Thank You For Your Service, see this movie. There's no doubt in my mind you'll enjoy it. It's got some wonderful performances just right across the board. There's three or four really solid, amazing performances. So yes, I would, this is my, you know, I give it 2 M4 rifles and 4 Humvees.
I give it 1 Purple Heart.
Oh,
and you should get it.
Clever man, Nick. Clever man.
Yeah, yes.
Move on to Jigsaw. Jigsaw is a movie that I'm sure a lot of people are very excited about, myself included. But let's back up a little bit. Talk about Saw movies 1 through 7. Take a little bit. Talk about each one of them. Saw. Two men wake up in a room. One's chained to a tub. Well, this is one of my few gripes with Jigsaw is Jigsaw's whole thing is he gives you a choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, make your choice, live or die, make your choice.
And it depends on what you're going to give to live.
Well, it depends on your actions, you know? I mean, yeah. How you see what you did as how much you want to repent or how much you want to survive is... I mean, not that he always does it the easiest way. Like, there's, for instance, there's a game where two people and they have to cut... The more flesh they cut off themselves and put on the scale, one of them's going to die, one of them's going to live. And, like, that's kind of weird, but okay. I mean, I wouldn't want to be part of that game. I was like, you know what? I quit. I'm just going to let it kill me. We're good. No hard feelings. Other contestants.
It just ain't worth it, man.
Just cut off your finger, put it in there, you'll win. Because it's more weight than I'm going to give. Nothing. So.
Yeah.
So, two men wake up in a room. One's chained in the bathtub. Oh, that's what I was talking about. As soon, the opening moments of Saw, this poor guy wakes up in a tub. Obviously, he's underwater submerged. He comes awake. Obviously, he's going to flail about. And then the key to his chain goes down the drain. Like, that, every time I see that, that makes me so mad.
Yeah.
I like Jigsaw. That's so unfair of Jigsaw.
And that, exactly. And that's, like, that's the first couple minutes. And
that is, like, the opening minute. Like, how could he possibly have won that?
Yeah, exactly. How is that fair?
That's not fair. Jigsaw? Bastard, it's not fair. Lee Wannell and Carrie Elwes are the two people chained, people that have joined them, Danny Glover, Ken Lwing, Dina Meyer, and Michael Emerson are some of their cast members of how this all plays out. It's all connected. They're all playing Jigsaw's game. And this is the only one of the movies I think is truly brilliant as far as you definitely cannot see that coming. Like, you cannot see it coming, and if you do, you're just a liar.
Yeah.
I knew that was him the whole time. No, you didn't. There's no way.
Yeah, it came out in 2004, and to be honest, it was weirdly new for the time, I guess.
Well, it was so much different than the other hack and slash that we've been getting.
Exactly.
As far as it was like a psychological thing. I mean, Saw turned out to be this, you know, it turned into this gory, you know, cut off your leg and your foot and your arm, and it turned into gore when it could have gone a much more intelligent route, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the studio must have done their research, and gore sells more than, like, psychological thrillers, so.
It's certainly interesting how Jigsaw works, or how John Kramer works his way through these movies.
Well, it's to me, it's a lot like the Metal Gear franchise. If you're familiar, it's a lot of pretension. It's a lot of I'm sure past the first three, they did not have these movies mapped out. It's very obvious that the first three they were all thought out as one. As trilogy, and then 4, 5, 6, and 7 seemed like, nope, we can stretch it out. No, we got two more movies out of this one. Like,
you can definitely tell. I totally agree with you, because 5, 6, and 7 they come out of nowhere with these plot points, and you're just like, what?
That's exactly like Gordon coming back in the lab. What the fuck? So the guy in the Saw is, there's three guys in the room. One of them supposedly shot himself in the head, and they're trying to figure out who did it. The guy in the center of the room stands up in the end. That's the big revelation of, holy crap, it was that guy. Adam learns nothing. Dr. Gordon made it out. We don't see him again for several more movies, but Saw 2. It focused on one of the detectives hunting Jigsaw down. And Detective Eric Matthews, played by Donnie Wahlberg, and his son, the story focused around him and his son, of there was a game going on inside. There's a game going on. All he had to do was sit down and listen to Jigsaw talk until the timer ran out, and his son would have been okay, but... On the computer screen behind him, he's got You see the game, he's playing with a bunch of very desperate people and his son, so of course he's getting more antsy than Detective Matthews, and is unable to comply with his request, and as such, loses the game. Other players in this one, Dina Meyer's back. There are people just come and go in this franchise like it's nothing. Yeah. Johnny Smith and Amanda Young from the first one is back. Tobin Bell, obviously, Jigsaw.
Was Saw 2 such a stretch from, I mean, obviously it is coming from Saw, from just the regular Saw 1. Because in a way, you know, it's much bigger. You know, they're not just in the one room. A lot more characters, a lot more deaths, a lot more craziness.
Well, see, then I was on to Jigsaw. By that time, I was so obsessed with the first Saw movie, watched it so many times, I was on to him. And the camera is very careful to show you behind Jigsaw, what's behind Jigsaw, and there's a safe behind Jigsaw. And what he says to Eric is, when he keeps asking, where's my son, Jigsaw says, your son is in a safe and secure. I was like, oh, he's in a safe. He's in a safe. Just stop talking. Just listen to him. But nope. It's all, you know. Because by then I was, you know, I was okay, I'm not going to let this movie get me this time. I'm going to figure it out. And I did.
Yeah.
I was very excited about that. My brother did not, however. We had different... Anyway, we had a game going at the time, and anyway. Eric Matthews. I was thinking of Eric Matthews from Boy Meets World, but...
Classic.
They end up again in the Saw room. That's the whole big thing, is they make their way down to the room in the original, where Amanda could say game over again. People like saying game over in this franchise. Saw 3 brings a close to the original trilogy. Jigsaw, Amanda is back. Eric Matthews is back. He's limping down the hallway. He's also cut off his foot, or he's broke his foot, and he's trying to make his way to save his son. Dina Meyer's in it, the SWAT guy. Oh, Lyric Bent, Officer Rigg, is in it. They're all trying to find Jigsaw, unable to. We end in a room with Jigsaw. He's had cancer. He's very sick. Everyone at that time fails. Everybody fails.
No, man. Once we understood, you know, his big problem, not going through doors that are secure.
Well, he's too headstrong.
Yeah.
He doesn't wait.
It just blows my mind, man.
Well, that was in the fourth one. That wasn't three, that was the fourth one.
Yeah, that's true.
That was... The story's come to an end. At this point, everything is wrapped up in the end of the third one. All the points have come to an end. You could literally walk away from the franchise. They probably should have walked away from the franchise at that point, but chose not to because of how much money it's making, I'm sure. But then we move on to the very awkward Saw 4, which is a new person as Jigsaw, because in the third one, Jigsaw has been... His throat was cut by, surprise, surprise, a saw when he was testing Angus McFadden, actually, from Braveheart, of all things. He was testing him, and I love when he says, live or die, Jeff, make our choice. Because whatever choice Jeff was going to make was going to affect everyone in that room, and he did, and he chose wrong. And well, everyone suffered for it. The fourth Saw starts its own, that the first three are separate, and then the next four are very separate. There's a new Jigsaw, there's lots of new people introduced. Obviously, Tobin Bell is back as Jigsaw, going back to the beginning of the story. Kostas Mandalore is Mark Hoffman. He's Scott Peterson. You know him from Gilmore Girls. Bessie Russell, Jigsaw's wife, enters. Daniel Rigg is back, Officer Rigg. Dina Meyer has passed in the third one. Amanda's back. Everyone comes back. What do you think of the fourth one, Nick?
I thought it was interesting, and it, like I just talked about Riggs and his whole headstrong mindset. It wasn't until the end, obviously, where I put two and two together, where this literally is happening as the third movie is happening. And I think I was just so mind blown that I got really excited for Saw. It brought me back into, I wasn't like a huge fan of the franchise, but the first one, obviously, second, third, and then I kind of just stopped watching when they came out. But it definitely blew my mind, you know, to find out that
it's one of those things. But you know how many moving parts Jigsaw would have to predict to make all these tapes in advance, to make all these games in advance? Do you have any idea? Like, you cannot possibly see that far ahead.
It seems unrealistic.
Unrealistic. I mean, it's the same kind of unreal as the Joker is for me in The Dark Knight. It's just, he sees everything, so he sees everything 500 moves ahead. It's not real. Like, it's not possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Therefore, the Saw movies to me were always fun, and I watched them because, well, I'd seen the previous ones, so why not? But they're almost kind of laughable in a sense that it's like, no one can set, it's like, what's the Home Alone? The kid making all those traps? Like, are you kidding me with that? Like, come on. Jeez. But, I mean, they work. People love them. I love them. I paid to watch, I didn't pay to watch 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. I was working in a movie, or 6. Actually, I didn't pay to watch any of the first 7. So, I was working at a movie theater the entire time. You never pay to watch movies when working in a movie theater, but...
Jigsaw was actually the first Saw movie I paid for. I have the original, and shout out to Netflix, they have literally every Saw.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Usually they'd leave one or two out to make you buy it, but good for Netflix. Saw 5, we move on to, again, the story of Hoffman and his constituents. Agent Strom and Hoffman battling back and forth. Jigsaw, he goes back in the story. His wife is back. Everyone else has been on the original Jigsaw team. They're on the original detective team looking for Jigsaw. They've been killed. They've all had their stories and have all failed. This is the story. This is the continuation of Peter Strom's story. And Costas' character, Mark Hoffman's story, this is their story. I think it's less interesting after 3. I think 4, 5, 6, and 7 are all so less interesting because they're all so contrived in the fact that there's no way that could all play out the way Jigsaw would have seen it playing out.
Exactly. It's trying too hard, if anything.
He leaves tapes for people. If 15 conditions are met, they would end up in this place, and he leaves a tape for them. It's like so... Oh, my goodness.
I was talking to someone... this is one of my friends at a bar over the week, where I was talking about Strom's escape when he had the box that filled up with water, and he just takes a pen and stabs himself in the throat. That, my friend, is fight or flight. That's thinking on your feet.
See, that would just hurt too much to me. I would be like, you know what, I'll just drown. I'm fine.
You know what, I'll just, that's whatever.
I'll just drown, whatever.
Maybe
you
could drink the water. Why not?
Oh,
how much water could there be?
I want to say the production value of the first one was extremely lacking as far as it looked like they shot that one on a shoestring budget. Budget had to have been $40 or something, but it wasn't until the incredible success of that movie that, you know, two through Jigsaw were actually, you know, bigger budget, much bigger budget.
Do you think that kind of made it go a little crazy, made them go a little crazy with the plots, or...
Yeah, I think so. How popular it was, yeah, I do. How much money they were
trying
making.
To keep it simple to what they were used to, I guess.
Saw 6 was a continuation again of more Hoffman. This time, Peter Strom's boss, Erickson, is involved. His partner, Jill. Amanda comes back in the backward storytelling. It's hard to keep track of who's alive and who's dead in this franchise. It pays off to binge them in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you know who's dead and who's not and whose motives they were, instead of waiting a year to watch each one. So Saw 6 is pretty average I thought it was 6 and 7 were by far my least favorites. They weren't fun. They weren't the end to the amazing start that Saw had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To me, anyway. It got contrived. Mark Hoffman starts operating behind the scenes. He's the cop who's 27 steps ahead of every other cop, trying to be the next Jigsaw. It's almost kind of insulting, to mm-hmm. be honest. They're like, are you kidding me? Cops can't see this? Are they stupid? And what are they? Are they stupid or what? And then 7 brings it all to an end with bringing back Dr. Gordon from the first one who cut his foot off. Which, to be honest, I didn't see it coming, but I should have guessed it because we never saw anything. We never saw him killed or stopped from crawling his way to the surface.
Yeah, so. Very true. Very true. Yeah, man. I don't know. It's interesting. You know, they say Saw 3D, the final chapter, but...
Yeah, but it was.
But it wasn't. It wasn't.
By the end of this one, almost everyone is dead. Everyone that had any involvement whatsoever is almost dead or will be dead soon. It's like I said, it's almost like they were like, you know what? We're killing everybody. Everyone's dying. So that's kind of what they did at the end of 7. They found a way to get rid of everyone. Except, well, the interesting part is Tobin Bell in the timeline was only alive for 3 of the movies, but he gets top billing every single time. Good for you, man. Tobin Bell. Good for you. And as a testament to how good... And I really think he's fantastic. Tobin Bell is really awesome.
He plays this part well.
He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, almost 8 things coming out in 2000, the rest of 2017 and 18. So...
Wow. That's awesome.
That's a lot of things. That I think the Saw franchise survived as well as it did because of how awesome he is.
It's his voice to me. That's what gets me.
It's his voice on the tape for me. It's not when he talks, but it's his voice when he makes the tapes. I think is very awesome.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, gotta love Tobin Bell. Which brings us to the newest installment, Jigsaw. It takes place 10 years after John Kramer was killed in the end of 3. And then the other events unfold can't be months after 3 is over. So about roughly 10 years after the events of Saw through Saw 7, Jigsaw takes place. We pick up, we have new contestants, we have 5 new contestants playing a game, obviously. It always starts out with contestants playing a game. And Tobin Bell is the only person that returns, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he's the only person that returns to the franchise. So there's no new faces except for him. But joining him, Matt Passmore, Callum Keith Wren, Hannah Anderson, Laura Vandervoort, Paul Bronstein, and Brittany Allen. They're all among the... There's not really any big names here besides Tobin Bell. And what's interesting about besides Tobin Bell is if you take Saw away, does anyone know who Tobin Bell is? Nope.
No.
I mean, he's been doing this for decades. He's been in smaller roles, but only now do people know who he is, which I think is kind of a testament to this franchise as far as what it is for him.
Yeah.
Directed by Michael Sperrig, and also he's one of the writers as well. We have one more Jigsaw tale coming up. Again, dead people keep turning up around the city. They have met a very gruesome death. And the investigating team is trying to figure out and stop this before it becomes another series of games. Which I kind of do like the idea of Jigsaw or the Saw games holding a city at ransom kind of until, you know, all the police force is spent trying to figure out where this is. I thought that was really cool.
Like a whole city? That'd be crazy.
Well, everyone knew who Jigsaw was. Everyone watching the news was like, oh my god, it's starting again. Like, I mean, so
there's a couple things in this movie that that are like lines that just that hold some power to them. Like, as well, especially when you hear Jigsaw or John Kramer, when you hear his voice on the tapes, and he says stuff like "Salvation can be yours," or one of the characters, it was I forget her name, but it was the woman, probably the leading woman who made it farthest in the game, where she said games can be won earlier in the game. It's lines like that, you know, they don't blow your mind, but they make you think, obviously.
Well, they're cleverly chosen.
Yeah, exactly.
Like in every Saw movie, I mean, it's the lines, the dialogue written is very cleverly chosen.
Mm-hmm.
To give hints. Like, for instance, you know, the second one, your son's in a safe and secure location. He's in the safe right behind me. So, I mean, it's really what you go off of, that the lines you choose to latch onto can make or break the movie for you.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool. We follow this detective group who's trying to figure this out, and along the way they keep finding bodies of contestants that are brought out that have failed, and that's how they know time is running out. As far as how this plays out, this is where I'm disappointed. There's almost no link to the original Saw movies, almost none. Which bothers me as far as motivation, as far as characters, as far as anything. There's almost no link to anything, and that's what bothers me the most. I mean, it's besides it's got a very similar plot to 2, as far as where the timelines are.
Yeah, I mean, well, these movies always have their classic Saw cliches. You know, you have the games that can be won. The testing of one's true will, how much do you want to live? This one, it had some pretty dark moments, as in the people chosen for the game.
Well, I mean, it's like, for instance, when he looks at someone, and right before a bullet is put into his shotgun, he goes, "This is the key to your salvation," and When the bullet is shot, there's a key in the bullet. How would you ever think to, like, no, take the bullet out, let's examine the bullet. Like, how would you ever know to do that?
Yeah.
That's so unfair of Jigsaw to do. It just, as a killer who prides himself as never actually murdering anybody, and he never did. Jigsaw's a clever man in that way. He always gave people choice. But, I mean, he made the circumstance ripe for them committing suicide, if that's how you see it. I mean, the guy, for instance, there's a guy who woke up in this, not in this movie, but earlier in the franchise, he wakes up in a small caged room of barbed wire, and he has to make it out in under a minute, or the doors are going to close and he's going to be locked in there forever. I mean, who would pass that test?
Yeah. There are certainly some things that, throughout the whole franchise that just... There are games that can't be won. they really are, and it certainly is interesting. Who in the hell is thinking up of all these crazy games?
That's not another thing. I understand that, like, John had cancer, and he had cancer, and like he was very very sick, and he didn't find all this out until later. And when he did find it out, his wife at the time. They'd lost their son due to a junkie opening a door too hard. Where does he get all the time and the money for all the building all these traps? And he's just,
yeah. Well, I guess in the franchise, they say he's, well, they don't say he's wealthy, but you kind of get this understanding that he has a good bit of money coming in.
Yeah, but they never tell you.
Yeah.
They're never like, no, yeah. He was a lawyer for 25 years. Well, then I'd be like, well, he's probably got, you know, a couple million stashed away. But, I mean, they just don't ever tell you. I mean, they take one episode with, pound it into your head over and over again that he understands the human mind. And when you understand the human mind, it's easy to understand the choices people will make. I mean, is it, or is it when people get panicked, they tend to make bad choices, and then it's just chaos. It's not, you don't know anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in my mind, when you're panicked, you're making a frantic decision, and you don't know the outcome. And yeah, exactly, it is chaos where you don't know what's gonna happen. And if you don't have the stability, hey man, you might be fucked.
So
yeah, it's just.
I will say that I really enjoyed seeing Tobin Bell again as Jigsaw. I was really worried that he wasn't going to be in this movie much, even though it's called Jigsaw. But on the one good thing of Tobin Bell being in this movie, there are a dozen negatives to follow. One, the guy, when the person reveals himself as to why he's doing what he's doing, none of it makes any sense. There's no rhyme or reason behind any of it. The detectives, they are the worst detectives on the planet. I mean, they couldn't solve any crime if it laid all out in front of them. They are the worst. There's not really much redeeming value to this movie, except it is part of a bigger franchise, and most people have probably seen, if not the majority, all of them up to this point. So why wouldn't, if you've seen the first seven, why wouldn't you watch this one? That's the question I want to ask.
Yeah. I feel you. And I think that's, I totally agree with you too. You know, if you've seen the Saw movies, all of them at least, or just one or two, and you're interested, yeah, you might enjoy the movie, or you might think it's not that good. but yeah, man, it had its twists and turns, just like any other Saw movie. I have a question.
Shoot, Nick.
Is this the last one, or do you think there's going to be another one?
They've definitely set it up to go further if they want.
Yeah.
Although, I think the very mediocre in what they wanted to be a financial success has not been a financial success. I think they wanted it to be much higher than where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than $60 million. I assume they wanted to break the $100 million mark by the first two weekends, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I don't. I mean, there might be more because I mean they seem to make obscene amounts of money. And I read an article where it says the production budget for all of them has been less than what the second one brought in altogether. So I mean, that you know, one movie's success paid for the entire franchise. So they're not hurting for money on it. But I mean, you have to look at it as well. People are starting to drop off. Now, you know what I mean? Like, why are we shouldn't, or if they decide to go away for 20 years and come back with one more, I'd be okay with that as well. I mean,
I could watch that.
Well, I mean, I would, I mean,
years.
I've seen eight of them. Why not see the ninth one? You know what I mean? You've seen eight. All right. Yes, I do think the Saw movies have run their course. I hope they've run their course and whatever minds are behind this one, just move on to creating another fun franchise. It spawns two or three more good ones and then stops. Just stop where you're ahead. But we will see. For this week's Clark Hayes list of movies you should probably watch, obviously we liked Thank You for Your Service more. So We Were Soldiers, 2002, director Randall Wallace, Mel Gibson, Madeline Stowe, Greg Kinnear, Sam Elliott, Chris Klein, Carrie Russell, Barry Pepper, Ryan Hurst, John Hamm. I met Ryan Hurst. He's a cool dude. The story of the first major battle between American forces and the forces of Vietnam. U.S. forces were outnumbered, cut off, and surrounded, counting on each other for survival. The families back home, fighting their own private war, keeping up the war effort, delivering news of the deceased on the base. I love Mel Gibson. The first reason should be, actually number the third reason, Mel Gibson. But the first one is, it's a good movie about a very unpopular war, a war that we didn't quite get. And there's a lot of historians that still that agree that we still didn't understand our role in that war. And
yeah.
That was a big problem at the time. It's still a big problem now, debating it. But it's from a book called We Were Soldiers Once and Young, who Hal Moore, the protagonist in this movie, played by Mel Gibson, co-authored this book, and he was on set the entire time. So there's the advantage of being firsthand knowledge of what happened. And so there's historical accuracy, which is hard to come by. I mean, it's like you watch a World War II movie and it's like, nope, someone was there. Well, no one's alive that was there. So that's kind of hard to come by, firsthand knowledge these days. But the Vietnam War, it is possible to get firsthand knowledge these days. And he is definitely, he lived it. He survived it.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and that's, especially on war movies, that's a good thing to have. To at least make sure it's authentic. Yeah.
I remember watching one of the behind the scenes and how they were interviewing Hal Moore, and he said, I was so sick of seeing all these stories told about Vietnam that were just wrong. It didn't happen like that. But his goal was to get it right the first damn time. That's what he said.
So, the first damn time. That's number two. Awesome.
Randall Wallace was the director. He wrote it. He also wrote Braveheart, which won all kinds of awards. A great movie. Pearl Harbor, which the problem with Pearl Harbor didn't come with the writing. It was other things, but the writing wasn't bad. We were soldiers. And he understands the marriage of image and sound, as we've excuse me. Going on with that is, there's three scenes that I love, and that's leaving for war, when all the soldiers, all the officers, the enlisted men are walking out of their barracks, walking out of their houses to go get on the bus, and there's this wonderful crescendo of the music, this very emotional music, as they all meet up in the same spot and get on the buses, going to war. And then there's the last charge up the hill. They're out of options, they're outnumbered, outgunned. And all of a sudden, Hal Moore, Mel Gibson, gives the order to fix bayonets, and they charge. And it's an awesome thing to watch. These guys who have been on the back foot the entire time, the U.S. force who have been playing defense the entire time, getting smaller and smaller, are able to make an offensive push, which is, you know, you want to see that. As an American audience watching this movie, you want to see that, obviously. And then when everyone leaves and they've hopped off and Mel's the last one, his foot is the last one on soil, and then the chopper takes off, and then the soldiers from Vietnam come down and they look at the battle site, and one of them holds up the commander of the North Vietnam, or the Vietnam forces, holds up a flag that was stuck into a tree stump, and he says, "This will become an American war, like all the others." And it's just a wonderful line, because, I mean, like, yes, he was right in the fact that that was the first time that their forces had met, and they know that each of them are capable of, they've underestimated the other one.
Exactly. Sets a tone.
Exactly. It will set the tone for a war that we ultimately did not win. That's your Clark Hayes. We Were Soldiers 2002, a good one to have in your collection, a good one to watch every now and again. That one does pass the the Netflix test. I don't think Jigsaw, I mean, it would if you're watching all of them in succession. Thank You for Your Service definitely does. So with that in mind, thank you for listening to the episode. You can listen to us on Apple iTunes. You can set each episode download and it'll show up on your phone. And you can listen to it as you drive in traffic or whatever. You can also do us on Google Play. You can check out the Facebook group, the Facebook page by the same name, For the Love of Cinema. And then you can tweet us at Love Cinema Pod. I can reach at Grayson Maxwell 1 and Nick.
And Moore 1776.
And Moore 1776. We thank you very much for listening to the episode. And you have a wonderful evening. And tune in to next week's our episode on Thor.